You're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
You're getting a sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Joining us on the program in about 30 minutes' time, Jeff Nieberg from the Philadelphia Daily News to discuss the Flyers signing of Jakub Voracek to a lengthy contract extension. We'll also talk about their offseason. And then in the next hour, we're going to be joined by Drew Spivak, ESPNDenver.com, talk about the Winnipeg Jets' Central Division rival, Colorado Avalanche. They've also been quite active this offseason. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com. Alongside my colleagues, Richard Pollock and the pierogi man himself, Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Gentlemen, it's been a while. Good to see you both.
Yeah, well, first of all, happy birthday, Drew.
Thank you.
Got to get that out of the way.
Thank you very much.
Secondly, we got to welcome back Jesse Pollock into the studio.
Mm-hmm.
We got him back for the summer.
Yeah, I see intern Jesse Pollock when he makes his triumphant return.
Yeah, it's good to have you back in the studio, Jesse, as always.
How old is Drew?
I was surprised you didn't actually go with the age joke right off the start there, Ezzy.
Well, it's tough, really. Like guessing Drew's age is kind of like guessing the age of a tree. Like, you almost have to look at kind of like the rings of the tree or, you know, look at like the wrinkles that Drew's got on his face to really age him.
I don't have many wrinkles. I have a fair bit of gray in my beard I was noticing, but I don't have very many wrinkles.
Well, how old is
he? We know that you're somewhere between 65 and 75.
Yeah, that's about right. You know, these milestone birthdays, you know, like when you get to be 70 like I am, they don't come around very often.
That's true.
You know, you got to celebrate them. We had a very nice dinner with my wife and my parents and, you know, those two.
And your grandchildren.
My grandchildren, yes. The grandchildren came up. They came up from down south to visit and everything else. So it was really a lovely evening, I must say.
This is our worst of show, right?
This is our worst of show. That's right. Last week was the best of show. This is the worst of show.
No, the rest of the shows for the year are actually just the worst
of
show. Remember when someone actually called into the show and wasn't sure if Drew was that old, as old as I guess Richie and I make fun of him for being?
They asked, like, how old is that? Is Drew Mandel, actually?
You're actually only, I think you're what? Well, I'm 11 months and 3 weeks older than I am.
Yes, exactly.
So
significantly more mature than you, but 11 months and three older, and 3 weeks
you're
older.
You're 30 years more mature than I am.
Yeah.
But
you didn't eat 24 pierogies on Thursday.
I thought he ate 29 pierogies.
Well, there was some controversy at the pierogi competition.
Hang on. Wasn't this wasn't adjudicated by a reputable accounting firm, like, you know, that you see at the Oscars or at the Emmys? You know, they come out with, you know, the briefcase and it's been adjudicated by,
well,
you know.
There's two problems. The briefcase had pierogies in it, and the adjudicator for Ezzy was Matt Leibel.
It was Matt Leibel. It was there were official judges for this event, obviously hosted by Hustler. Props to Hus for putting on a great event here. And obviously props to Abdul Chocolate Thunder for eating 51 pierogies in 7 minutes.
That's remarkable.
It's unbelievable.
But the controversy was the pierogies were boiled. We knew they were going to be boiled. By the way, whatever we were going to talk about this segment, just throw it out, because this is all about the pierogi competition. So the pierogies come out. They're boiled. But they were, first off, there were bacon bits and onions, kind of chopped up onions on them, which I thought was kind of unnecessary because, really, we were there to eat the pierogies, not to eat the bacon bits.
Yeah, ooh,
interesting.
But that's how you eat pierogies.
It's not kosher, first of all.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that was a real concern of yours.
But the pierogies came out, and they weren't very warm. It was almost like they'd sat at room temperature. I'm going to have to take this up with Hus and Remus, by the way. But the pierogies were a little bit cold, and I think that affected my ability to eat more. I think if they were hotter, I'm used to eating my pierogies fried and nice and hot right out of the frying pan.
I would argue, though, it would be easier to eat lukewarm pierogies than it would be to eat, you know, boiling, piping hot pierogies, especially when you're limited to only a 7-minute window. I would say that's an advantage for all the competitive eaters rather than a disadvantage.
Well, you definitely don't want them piping hot. You don't want to be burning the roof of your mouth on the pierogies. But
what kind of pierogies were they? Were they potato and cheddar, potato and onion?
No, well, there were kind of, well, there was more like chives on top of the onion, pardon me, on top of the pierogies, but they were cheese and potato, I think.
Yeah, you couldn't taste them. You were just eating
After you eat the first five or six pierogies, Richie was there. He saw me. I mean, by the way, after this pierogi competition, it was tons of fun. But afterwards, I thought I was going to need to go to the hospital. I didn't feel well at all.
He didn't look very good. I'll just, before we transition to the, you want to talk about the Jets, Drew, I will say that one of the competitors, Dude Love.
Yes, Dude Love.
Walked by us. Dude Love. Walked by us at the end of the competition. Dude Love finished second.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and as Ezzy said, Hustler did
Tony
a great
DeRose
job.
Is his real name. Yeah.
Dude Love is the name
he's not known as Dude Love.
So Dude Love walked by, and he walks by us after the competition, and he's like, ah, I just ate 43 pierogies. Now it's time for some dessert with a piece of pie.
Really? That's a guy who, is that, does this look like a guy who's had all he can eat? It doesn't. He had some pie. My kind of man eating pie like that.
Shout out to Dude Love, because that guy is my hero. I mean, the guy crushes 41 pierogies, and then he has a piece of pie afterwards. I mean,
God.
He was a machine. I mean, Abdul obviously was the ultimate winner, but Dude Love wasn't that far behind. I mean, he could have probably stuffed in a few more pierogies and taken the title. But
he had to save room for pie, though, which is just good thinking, really, when you consider it.
At the end of the day, I've decided that after the University of Manitoba chicken wing eating competition last year,
yeah,
and the Spirit of Ukraine pierogi eating competition this year, I think I'm going to retire because I'm going to have a heart attack.
Yeah. Let's transition to the Winnipeg Jets. Here we are, you know, about a month away from the start of training camp, a month, 5 weeks, give or take. Still no news on the Andrew Ladd contract extension. We continue to wait, I guess, in a state of anticipation, but there's no news on that front at all.
August, we've spoken about this on the show before, Drew. August is a very quiet month.
Sure.
And I don't know the personal schedules, of course, of team employees, but I do know that lots of team employees do take time off in August.
Mm-hmm. Well, for a fact that Chevy was at the Greek Pavilion on Thursday night. I have an inside source that tells me that Chevy was at the Greek Pavilion.
Was he in a Euro eating contest?
Yeah, he was in the Spanakopita eating contest at that point.
Wherever he is, taking time off. I mean, these guys always work, but also, it's a little bit of a slower time. I think when you want to look at here is what happens in the 2.5 weeks before training camp. And by that, I mean probably September 1,
mm-hmm.
I'm guessing, through middle of September, if there's any action there. Yeah, and the longer this goes on, the more, I think, anxious Jets fans get as to what's happening. And I think that goes for Andrew Ladd first and foremost, in my opinion, and then Dustin Byfuglien a close second. And I think also, guys, there's a need for more players. Like, if they were to sign Byfuglien and Ladd, or not sign Byfuglien and Ladd, or sign one of the two, unless they are trading one of those players and getting back multiple players, they have holes in this roster that they need to fill. So when you see guys signing, Matt Cullen, just for one example, who I thought might be a candidate, as he had mentioned him in his article that he wrote, and I thought might be a candidate from Moorhead, Fargo-Moorhead area, close by, of course, a veteran. I believe would have played for Paul Maurice with Carolina. But don't quote me on that. He might have been in the period where Paul Maurice wasn't there. In any event, a guy who can play center and wing, he can play on the point of your power play. A little bit more of a scorer than a shooter, than a passer, but a solid player. Certainly nothing spectacular. Never was anything spectacular, and certainly isn't that now. But a NHL player. And if the Jets are going to go into the year with the roster that they currently have, I think there's a lack of depth up front, and there's a significant over-reliance on youth. So I think we're not just talking about Ladd and Byfuglien, and again, these things might be tied together if you do make a trade, but Ladd or Byfuglien aren't the only two things the Jets have to take care of. They also have to sign a forward or two.
They would have been there at the same time. Maurice would have been familiar with them. Maurice, obviously, in the second stint in Carolina, would have been there at the same time as Matt Cullen.
Do you think Paul Maurice, speaking from a coaching perspective, Paul Maurice, Charlie Hattie, Pascal Vincent, do you think Paul Maurice wants to go into the season looking everywhere he looks, he's relying on a really young player? And I mean, like, every line, basically?
Probably not. I think coaches are usually more comfortable with veteran players. And I mean, there's some coaches who are fine with young players, but not on every line.
Yeah, and a coach with the security of Paul Maurice would be a little more comfortable with it. Having said that, you also want your young players, Ezzy, to earn a spot. And by my calculations, unless they do bring in a forward or two free agent-wise or trade-wise and don't give up one, you know, they have to add an additional forward. I just don't see how that works. Matt Halaschuk isn't going to be the competition for that. You need something above that.
As in, there's no training camp battles for jobs.
For the young players especially,
for the young players especially.
Well, I think to address Richie's first point, I agree with you 100% here that I thought that the Jets would have signed a veteran left winger, possibly a veteran left winger and a veteran center. Mm-hmm. So you're talking Matt Cullen would be your fourth line center to replace Jim Slater. Veteran left winger, so, you know, put in a Curtis Glencross,
sure,
for example, in there, right? And I do think there's an issue with too many rookies there in your bottom six. I don't think anybody's going to be surprised if Nikolai Ehlers plays most of the season for the Jets, at the very least plays 9 games before they decide to possibly send him back to junior before his entry-level deal kicks in. Mm-hmm. But I think we would all be surprised if the Jets have 3 rookies in the bottom six. So you're looking at Joel Armia, you're looking at Andrew Kopp, Nick Batan. I think Nick Batan probably, we would agree, is a bit of a long shot, but I think Andrew Kopp, because he's got the university experience with the University of Michigan, you know, I don't think he's penciled in at all as the fourth line center, but because he signed an entry level contract, plus you throw in Joel Armia, who's got the AHL experience. Those are 3 names that I think we'd all agree. But getting back to what Richie said earlier about Andrew Ladd, I think we're all surprised here. And I think a lot of observers are surprised that Andrew Ladd hasn't signed yet. And I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. I remember at the draft, Gary was talking about Andrew Ladd possibly signing a couple of days after the draft. So we're talking early July.
Sure.
And now we're here in
early August.
6 weeks
ago.
Now, I don't think there's any red flags here. I would say there's 0% chance that Andrew Ladd doesn't sign a contract extension before the season starts.
0%?
Zero?
Yeah. I don't know. Today's August 8th. If this was going to get done, if it was 0% chance, I think it would have gotten done already.
Well, if it was 0% in early July, maybe it's, you know, 10% now. Well, but I think you know, we brought this up a couple of weeks ago, and Richie, you know, asked the question, is it term or is it money? And, you know, it looks most likely that it's term because
the
cap number with a guy like Andrew Ladd, who is one of your top scorers, one of the top left wingers in the NHL, we all agree he's underrated, and he's proven that, you know, over the years that you know, he's a better captain than people gave him credit for, especially with the Jets making the playoffs. I mean, winning obviously helps, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you got to think that, you know, his side might even want 7 years. At the very least, they want 5. It's probably 6 or 7 years, right? So whereas Dustin Byfuglien's a lot more complicated, Richie, you got to think, to your point, they want to get Andrew Ladd signed before they go after any more veteran forwards. So if they're going to add a guy like Glencross, who makes, what, $3 million a year, hypothetically, they want to make sure that they already have Ladd's contract on the books before they decide to sign anybody else.
But, Ezzy, you know what you're going to be paying Ladd. You're paying Ladd between $6 and $7 million.
The market's been defined for you. The negotiation on terms of the actual value of the deal shouldn't be that complicated.
So, I mean, I guess the question is, Ezzy, like, you made a list. We can go through a list here. Curtis, I'm just going to list some free agents who are still available. Curtis Glencross, Brad Boyes, Sean Bergenheim. Okay? I mean, probably going to stay away from Jared Stoll. But Michael Ryder, Eric Cole, who I thought might be a possibility here, mm-hmm, based upon just the connections.
Paul Maurice connections back to Carolina again.
Steven Weiss. So, I mean, listen, guys. Does every one of those players want to come to Winnipeg? Probably not. Does every one of those players not have a contract, though?
Yeah. Does every one of those players want to play in the NHL?
Yeah, they want to play. And a guaranteed deal is probably their best. Being at least Temniak's another one. It's probably wants to get on a team, prove their worth in 1 year. And the fact the Jets, that's fine with them. You use each other. They use you to reestablish value. You use them to hold over for your young guys.
Mm-hmm.
And worst comes to worst, they bust. You've invested very little in them on a one-year deal. You either trade him or cut him or eat the salary, and you move on. And I just can't see how the Jets don't do that.
You're right. The downside to bringing that guy in and making your young player, you know, outperform the veteran, or vice versa,
Exactly, or vice versa.
Yeah,
sure.
Or vice versa. There's no downside to that whatsoever. And if all it costs you is money, and it's, you know, in NHL terms, a relatively marginal amount of money, and, you know, if they have to clear waivers and go play in the AHL, you know, what's the risk in doing that and making that deal? And the answer is there is no risk, really.
Yeah, and we're not going to argue with that. And, you know, our boy Frank Zappia, you know, is tweeting at us, you know, what about JC LaPon as a potential candidate for making the team? And I like LaPon. He's got that kind of, you know, grinder element to his game. You know, he's a smaller guy. But again, with JC LaPon, I think he's at least a year, probably 2 years away.
If ever.
Right? And exactly, we don't know. He's young at this point, Richie, but I think we'd all agree. Nikolai Ehlers, you watched Nikolai Ehlers play in the QMJHL last year. He's too skilled to be in junior anymore. He's the one guy you could say he's probably going to be NHL ready just because his skills, he's such a skilled player that he can play on the third line, and, you know, he might struggle and he might only get 35 points, but he has that skill set that'll make up for some of, you know, his defensive deficiencies. But when you're talking about Andrew Kopp and Joel Armia, we don't know. These guys haven't proven themselves at the NHL level.
I'll be honest. You can throw Alex Bermistrov into that list of players too. I mean, he hasn't played in the NHL in, what, 2 years now? You sort of know what he is.
Know
but
he's talented enough to be a top 12 guy.
Yeah, but you haven't seen
him in three years in the NHL. That's the difference.
Well, you haven't seen him in an NHL situation in 2 years. And so there is an adjustment period coming back.
Oh, I don't disagree, Drew, but we know he's capable of playing at a pretty high level.
Yes, I agree with you. I mean, you know that he is an NHL player. But to immediately, you know...
You don't know if Andrew Kopp's an NHL player. I mean, I certainly don't know. I haven't seen him play. Andrew Kopp's an NHL player. I haven't seen Joel Armia play. I don't know if he's an NHL player. I've seen Nikolai Ehlers play a game or two, and I know he's got the skill set to be an NHL player, but is he ready to be that? You'd think very possibly, as you mentioned, and the problem with him is he's a tweener, right? He can't play in the AHL next year because of the CHL deal with the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's either back to Halifax, or it's up with the big club.
So they don't want to mess around with his confidence. So I think there's more of a chance that if Nikolai Ehlers struggles, they stay with him. Maybe he, you know, sits out a few games, or maybe he moves down to the fourth line. But with Joel Armia and Andrew Kopp, I think that just because they start the season with the Jets doesn't mean, and especially with the Moose in the same building, I don't think there's any guarantee that either one of those two players is going to stay with the Jets the whole year.
But if you're saying, okay, so like if you go through the lines, okay, and you just say it's going to be Ladd, Little, Wheeler, just, and I know they didn't play together necessarily at the end of the year, okay? Ladd, Little, Wheeler, and then you'll just say Stafford, Scheifele, and Perreault. Okay, that's your top six. I'm just, you know, we're not going to pick the lines together right now, okay? So your third line center will be Lowry. Say you have Bermistrov on the left wing, okay?
Yeah.
So then you have four more spots. Are we saying three of those spots are going to young players and the other spots being shared by, say, Thorburn and Peluso, Ezzy?
Yeah.
If that's the
right
case.
Right now, that's the case.
If you're the Jets, you're relying on three young players that you just said may not even stick in the NHL. So if two of them were to bust, quote unquote, and I don't mean that for career, I just mean this year.
Yeah. Or get injured.
That's the other issue. We haven't talked about injuries, Drew. Two injuries. And who are you calling up?
Well, the farm system isn't. There's nobody banging on the ceiling to come play from the AHL team.
And maybe they do, but if you have an injury 5 games in and you're dedicated to Nick Batam playing, developing a year in the AHL or two, you don't want to suddenly thrust him into the pressure of an NHL role. That's the idea. So, you know, you hear this draft develop. That's part of the depth issue. The other part is filling spots with veterans to hold it over. And I still think they need to do that. And there are players available to do that. Let me tell you something. It's not going to be flashy. There's a reason they're available August 8th.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also not going to be that expensive because there's a reason they're available August 8th.
Time will tell to see what happens. We'll keep you updated here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and, of course, online on IllegalCurve.com. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll shift our focus to the Philadelphia Flyers, their big signing of Jakub Voracek. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Giroud directing traffic with his head. Now gets it to Voracek for the shot. They score! Jake Voracek fires and may have changed direction. And the Flyers win the hockey game 3-2. As Voracek scores for a case of Tasty Cake. And the Flyers with a dramatic victory.
Jakub Voracek scoring for the Philadelphia Flyers in a game earlier this year. He scored off the ice as well with a new 8-year, $66 million contract extension. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show is brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Jakub Voracek, nice contract extension for that young man.
We're not going to talk about what Frank's cooking up on the barbecue?
I haven't seen a tweet from him yet.
Okay.
But I'm sure Frank will send us a tweet shortly about what's on the grill.
Okay.
Usually he does grill and listen to the show at the same time. The usual policy, of course, applies. If you are cooking any meat and you send it to us via Twitter, we will favorite it and
right. Retweet
it.
Well, the hashtag's got to be tweet your meat, though.
Yes, hashtag okay. Tweet your meat.
Yeah.
Voracek, an 8-year, $66 million contract extension.
Mario Lemieux would like that contract.
I can see us running into trouble with that tweet your meat hashtag in hindsight. Average annual value, a salary cap hit of 8.5%.
Get your mind out of the gutter, man.
$8.25 million for Jakub Voracek. It just seems, he's earned this contract. This is a guy who came over from Columbus in the Jeff Carter deal.
Yep.
And since he's been in Philadelphia, since 2012-2013, there's only two wingers in the NHL who have more points than Voracek. He's earned this contract.
I'll tell you one thing. Paul Holmgren was overactive as general manager and I think did too much.
Mm-hmm.
But just quickly, if you look back at the two trades of Mike Richards and Jeff Carter, he won both of those trades. I know LA won the Cup, and I know Carter wasn't traded directly to LA,
mm-hmm.
but can we not say that he won both of those trades pretty clearly?
He certainly won the Carter-Voracek trade to Columbus. I mean, that one's...
Voracek and Couturier.
Yeah, well, sure, with the draft pick as well. Yeah, that one was a clear victory.
We can talk about that extension, too.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Couturier.
Okay, so that one seems like, and I like Jeff Carter. You guys know I like Jeff Carter. I like Voracek better. That was a win.
Mm-hmm.
Are you telling me that Mike Richards for Braden Shen and Wayne Simmonds is not a win too?
No, that's a win too.
I think
it's a win.
I think if you look at the trades and you don't consider, like you said, the Stanley Cups.
But even so, as they've outperformed those players.
At cheaper rates. What we've always said is, and I think this is just a given. Whichever team has the best player usually wins the trade.
Yeah,
because look at the Tyler Seguin trade.
Yeah.
Xander Kane trade. I mean, we'd all agree that he might have the potential to be the best player, but I think we all agreed that really Tyler Myers is the best player in that trade, right? I mean,
today he is.
It's a little more complicated with, there were a lot of players prospects and again, Xander Kane has the potential to be the best player in the trade, so we want to really evaluate the trade 2 years from now. But
that's why I'm doing this one.
I agree with Richie. I think just to quickly look at that contract, Drew. Jakub Voracek was a top three scorer on a very bad team last year, and so was Claude Giroux, top five, whatever it was, 81 points. He had a career year, but to me, Voracek, you're looking at a guy that really has turned into like a Jaromír Jágr 2.0, and it's not just because he's Czech, but it's because, and obviously Jágr's a Hall of Famer, but you look at the way Voracek has developed, the good players seem to get goals or seem to get on the scoreboard every
mm-hmm.
single game.
Mm-hmm.
And Voracek seems to have an impact on the game every time he goes out there. And this Philadelphia team, I think, is a candidate to be a bounce-back team and get into the playoffs. Even though they've got those issues on defense still, Drew,
mm-hmm.
they've got a lot of money tied up still on defense. Mark Streit, Andrew McDonald... they gave Michael Delzato a lot of money. Delzato was really good, though. I think he earned that contract. I know you want to get to that, too. But they have a lot of money tied up on the back end. But when you talk about Voracek and Giroux, I mean, because they have two of the best scoring forwards in the NHL, they're always a candidate to get into the playoffs because those two guys can take over games. Those guys individually can take over games,
absolutely.
Richie. But those two guys, when they're at their peak for the Philadelphia Flyers, those guys are dynamite. And so I think signing Voracek to an 8-year deal was a no-brainer.
So Voracek locks in at a cap hit of 8.25, Drew, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that'll put him next year just below Claude Giroux,
mm-hmm.
right? Tied right along with Ryan Getzlaff and Eric Staal, whose contract is expiring shortly, and just ahead of Phil Kessel. Okay. So what does Jakub Voracek not do? That's my question. Is he not a 40-goal scorer? He's not a 40-goal scorer. He's a natural playmaker more than he is a scorer. He's going to get you 20 to 25 goals.
Yeah.
Okay? Maybe on a good year, he'll surpass that 25 goal total.
He has the most assists of any winger over the last three seasons.
He's a tremendous playmaker. And he does so, and he's not in the periphery. He will go to the net. He has good speed down the wing. He plays the off wing. He can play with talent. He can really create for others. He doesn't need to only play with talent, but as you know, talent plays better with other talent. He brings great energy to the room. He'll fight if he needs to. Mm-hmm. He's very competitive. I mean, he's everything you want in a hockey player. And he's everything I'd want to invest big-time money and eight-year term into. I would have no hesitation in this contract.
Sorry, Richie, to cut you off, but isn't it amazing that he's only 25 years old?
He'll be 26 next week.
You know, I always think of the Gary Joyce book.
Yep.
When you know, if you've had a chance to read that book about scouting.
You took it from me for about 2 years.
Yeah. It's a really good book about the 2006 NHL draft, which is the year Eric Johnson went first overall.
Right.
And they talk about Voracek. And it's funny, they also talk about Jonathan Toews.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a debate, should he go that high? And I think we'd all agree he should have been first overall.
Yeah, probably.
But it's funny, you know, just quickly, Voracek, you know, it seems like he's 30 years old, but he's still only 25.
Yeah.
When you're looking to invest that much money and that much term into a player, you have to look at, okay, why would I hesitate? And I just don't see how, I don't see if you look at Voracek, what reason there is to hesitate. And you talk about you're turning 26, so he'll be 34 at the end of the contract. I got no issue with that either.
Prime years.
Yeah.
Right now, Ladd is arguing about 35, 36 years. That's really what the argument is, 37. Here, we're talking about up to 34, and that's the max. I'd feel comfortable if I'm Philadelphia. If I'm Voracek, I want to play in a city that wants to win. They've proven that. There might be some mismanagement, but they have new management in place now.
Mm-hmm.
Ron Hextall has got a new coach. We'll see what Dave Hextall has to do there. And we know they have to fix their defense, but they do have a lot of good young defenders in the system now, which is currently on the NHL roster, they're lacking. But overall, I think this is a great contract, and I think it's a great player.
And
you guys know I'm a big fan, always have been, since day one of Jakub Voracek. I haven't wavered in my thoughts and support for him in terms of how good of a player he is, and I think he's only going
to
get better.
Quickly, the Flyers also signed Sean Couturier to a six-year, $26 million contract.
Great
extension.
Contract, too.
Cap hit of $4.33 million mm-hmm. per season for Couturier.
Yeah, and Couturier, now, you know, it's going to be interesting to talk to Jeff Nyberg. I hope it's Nyberg. It might be Nyberg. He's the new Philly Daily News beat writer.
Tomato, tomato.
The Flyers are, I think, one or two players away, and I don't see them adding any more players.
They're like
Richie.
Six defensemen away.
But exactly. It's really, no, but it really is on defense. Yeah. But, you know, you look at the moves Hextall's made, trading Pronger's contract with Grossman to get Sam Gagne, who they think, we'll ask him about this, Jeff, about this, they think he might move to the wing, but, you know, on the Couturier point, he's been their third-line center.
Sam Gagne, by the way, is one of those guys who everyone thinks is a lot older than he actually is.
He's 25, too.
Yeah. I couldn't believe that. If you hear Sam Gagne, you think he's in his late 20s, early 30s.
There's a chance, Drew, that they move Couturier up to second-line center, which I think he deserves because I think he's underrated offensively. I think if you look at his totals, you know, he's had around 30 points, but it's because he's been playing third-line center. He was actually, I think it was ninth or something, eighth or ninth in the Selke voting. He's an excellent defensive center. So I think that contract was excellent. I think the move to get Sam Gagne to add more depth was an excellent move. I think signing Michael Neuwirth was a good move as your backup. I think Hextall has had one of the more underrated seasons as far as improving his team.
I think he's a smart general manager. I think it's going to take time to kind of remake the roster. As the Andre Couturier point, you know, 4.33. We look at Brandon Sutter's contract, which we'll talk about later, a younger player than Brandon Sutter.
Mm-hmm.
So you could argue certainly more effective in terms of the checking role.
Couturier is a significant step above Sutter. And I like Sutter, and I realize, you know, he has a famous last name and all that.
Yeah, well, that's a
just
factor.
Like Pollock. But I think when you look at Couturier, I mean, you're talking about a guy, again, Scheifele's age. Seems like Couturier, you know, is a lot older than he is. He's just coming off of his entry-level deal. The guy can play, and I think they know that, and that's why they locked him up for 6 years.
And what you're looking at, you made a good point about possibly playing second-line center. Maybe they elevate him or they have him stick in that role, Drew. I know mm-hmm. we got to get to Jeff here. But worst comes to worse, you've locked in a guy for 6 years from 23 to 29 at 4.33 to be a really good really good third line center who you know can check.
Yeah.
And even can score great.
And he can match up against the other team's best players.
He's done it against Malkin, done it against different guys. He's a smart player, and that's why he can do it. Mm-hmm. Never been the best skater, but he's smart enough to make up for that. So I have no issue with that contract either. I think those are two good contracts.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Jeff Nieberg of the Philadelphia Daily News talking about these contracts and more of the offseason in Philadelphia. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Shortly past 9:30 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, he's the new Philadelphia Flyers beat writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, Jeff Nieberg. Welcome to the program, and thanks very much for joining us.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Jeff, brought you on, obviously, to talk about a number of the contract extensions that the Flyers handed out in the last couple weeks, talk about their offseason as well. Let's start with Jakub Voracek, 8 years, $66 million, average annual value, a cap hit of $8.25 million per season. You know, this is a guy who's going to be, I think he's going to be 26 years old, if I'm not mistaken, next week. Is there, you know,
next Saturday.
Yeah, next Saturday, there you go. You know, it seems like this is just a guy who has completely earned this contract given his play over the last couple of seasons with the Philadelphia Flyers.
You guys said it earlier. I mean, the way he ranks over the past couple of years among wingers, I mean, he's been pretty elite the past couple of years. And, you know, if you read the comment section of the stories we wrote last week and the emails that I got, people don't understand that. It didn't maybe directly correlate to the Flyers making the playoffs, but there's no doubting his value. And, you know, players of his stature and of his age don't really hit the open market pretty often. And, you know, Ron Hextall made sure that he didn't let him do that. And you guys said it's a very fair contract.
Jeff, were you at all surprised that Voracek wasn't given a no trade or no movement clause?
I kind of was. You know, you never know how these things are going to shake out. I don't know if Hextall did it to protect himself a little bit. I was a little surprised. I mean, you team him up with Giroux, they're going to be on the first line again. I wouldn't expect him to get moved anytime soon, but you kind of have that out in case, you know, he gets into the year, age year 30 of that contract or 31. I mean, he's signed through 2024. There's no telling where the team's going to be, you know, when you get into that year. I mean, Drew's contract expires in 2022. If Hextall doesn't feel they're in a good position in 2022, maybe you can try to get rid of Voracek then. I mean, down the line, you never know what's going on. I think it's more of a protection thing than anything.
Jeff, you mentioned Claude Giroux. He signed, you know, as you mentioned, long-term at 8.275 per season cap hit. And after this season, Voracek's clipping in at 8.25. Was there like an internal, you know, salary ceiling there? You can't get paid more than Claude Giroux?
Well, I don't know if there was an internal thing. I was wondering as negotiations were going on if there was a world we could live in where Jake Voracek made more than Claude Giroux. And I certainly don't think it was out of the question. If they would have signed Jake for 8.5, I mean, I don't think that's an unfair deal either. I don't know if they wanted Claude to feel better about being the highest paid player on the team. I don't think Claude's the type of guy that would have minded. I mean, they're pretty much the same contract. Mm-hmm. The difference is very small.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Jeff Nieberg discussing the Philadelphia Flyers offseason and their recent contract extensions. Jeff, another extension that they handed out in the last couple weeks went to Sean Couturier. He gets a 6-year deal worth an annual average of $4.33 million per season. Is Couturier, you know, he's sort of been the lockdown, shutdown number three center for the last few years. Do you find that he's ready to take another step forward and maybe, you know, increase the offensive totals, because we know how proficient he's been when it comes to the defensive side of the game?
I don't know if that's what I expect to happen, but the Flyers certainly paid him to do so. You know, a lot of the question this offseason was what his new role would be under Dave Hextall, whether he'd stick to that third line center or, you know, maybe center the second line. And I think this contract pretty much indicates that they're thinking he's going to center the second line. You know, how it all shakes out. I mean, we're still a month out of training camp, and who's going to be paired with who? If Michael Raffle stays on the first line, Sam Gagner. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different things that could happen. But, you know, I kind of do it a little bit expect Sean to kind of take a leap. You know, it's tough to tell, though, where you guys know with a new coach comes a new system, and I don't know how he's going to be used yet. And, you know, there's all different kinds of things to consider. I do think that maybe even if it's not this year, in the next couple years, he's going to take a big leap offensively, and they're hoping that, you know, in year 3, 4, 5, 6 of that contract, that they're getting a steal on the AAV portion of it.
Jeff, just listening to you talk about the line combinations, I think to me is really fascinating, because we were talking about it right before you came on, and the Flyers, as you know, had a disappointing year last year, but when you talk about all these different line combinations and Michael Raffle, who had a very underrated season, scoring 21 goals there, playing for the most part on the top line there, and then you throw in Sam Gagner, who I wanted to ask you about, because I think that was one of the most underrated moves of this offseason, getting rid of Chris Pronger's contract, getting rid of Nicholas Grossman, who obviously struggled big time with the Flyers last year, and then you get a guy who, although he had a down year with the Arizona Coyotes, but let's be honest, the entire team did, but you throw in a guy like that who can either play on your second line or third line. I guess, first of all, what did you think of that move, and where do you think Sam Gagner is going to end up? Because I know there have been some rumblings that Gagner might move from center to wing.
I think that was one of the most fascinating moves of the offseason. If you would have asked me before the offseason if Chris Pronger's contract would get moved, I'd probably laugh at you. And, you know, that's something that Hextall kind of made like a magical move, getting Sam. And a lot of people are saying there's a lot more offense to be seen. I mean, obviously he was a very highly touted prospect years ago. And he's, you know, you guys talked about it before I came on. He's one of those guys that's sneaky young too, only 25 years old. I could see a world where he moves to where he plays wing on the first line, but I think in balancing out the lines, I wouldn't be shocked if Michael Raffle stays up there with Drew and Voracek, and you have Gagner on the second line wing with maybe Couturier and someone else. I think it definitely, you know, if you look at it just in terms of addition and subtraction in terms of the forwards, they got rid of Zach Rinaldo and added Sam Gagner, so it's only an upgrade. I don't know if you guys were able to follow Zach Rinaldo as close as we were here, you know, getting rid of him without even adding Sam Gagner was a huge addition for this team.
For a draft pick.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not sure how that happened, but we'll try and book Don Sweeney to ask him about it. You know, Jeff, you look at the back end, and we mentioned Nicholas Grossman moving over in that deal with obviously Chris Pronger's contract, and getting rid of Grossman makes the team faster just because he's not a very good skater. But you look at the back end, and they're still not a very fast team. Skating has been an issue for them. Re-signing Delzotto certainly helps in that regard, in that he's a pretty good puck mover and pretty good skater. What are the expectations that Ron Hextall has for Delzotto? He's coming back on a 2-year deal, still not completely committed to him, understandably so. But do you see if he possibly has a really good season this year, they could re-up him for the long term?
Oh, I definitely think so. I mean, I know you guys talked about it a little bit earlier about still having some financial issues on the back line and kind of trying to get rid of, I don't want to say the salary mess that Paul Holmgren left behind, but, you know, they have Mark Streit and Andrew McDonald at cap hits of over $5 million. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a couple years till they're out of that. And, you know, they have a lot of defensive prospects on the way. They drafted Ivan Provorov this year, Travis Sanheim, mm-hmm. you know, the list goes on. You know, I could see a world where Delzotto's contract ends in 2 years and they're ready to move on to some newer guys, or if he really plays well this year, yeah, I don't see a reason why they wouldn't want to lock him up long-term as kind of, you know, that guy that can be, you know, the defensive leader for the next couple of years.
I was going to ask you about that, Jeff. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Jeff Nyberg. He covers the Flyers for the Philadelphia Daily News. Jeff, you mentioned the defensive prospects, and you look back at the drafts the last, you know, 3 years for the Flyers. In the first round, they've gone defense, defense, defense. Samuel Morin a couple years ago, of course, Travis Sanheim last year, and then Ivan Provorov just, you know, last month or 6 weeks ago. Obviously, you might not, you know, Provorov, you can't expect to step into the lineup immediately. But, you know, when is this?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, he's very good, but you can't expect it to happen.
He's pretty good.
It would be a nice situation for the Flyers to be in. You know, when can you expect Samuel Morin and before him Shane Gostisbehere to step into the lineup and you know, maybe get that new wave of young defensemen going in Philadelphia?
Well, I'll back up a little bit and say that if any of these guys have a chance to make the team this year, it is Provorov.
Wow.
I think if he has a really good camp, there's a lot of scouts out there that are saying this kid's NHL ready. Mm-hmm. Sam Moran's a big kid. I think he could be up here pretty soon. I think the Flyers wish that they didn't have so many defensemen on one-way contracts, that they could get a couple of these guys up here this year, because, you know, they're still in rebuild mode. You know, they're 14 points out of the playoffs last year, didn't make too many additions to the lineup this year. You know, you can't be thinking that, you know, I know you guys said they're a bounce-back candidate. Sure, maybe they're a bounce-back candidate to get, you know, in the bottom half of the Eastern Conference and, you know, perhaps get in the playoffs. But, you know, I think some of these guys could play now. Shane was up there last year before he tore his ACL. All of them were pretty impressive at the team's development camp last month. The future is definitely bright. You know, we'll see how it shakes out the next couple of years. If they're able to get rid of, you know, Andrew McDonald's contract and free up some extra space, we'll see what happens.
Jeff, Vinny Cavalier, speaking of getting rid of contracts, which I think has been completely unfortunate. I've been a huge fan of LeCavalier's, you know, since the days even before he won the Cup in 2004 with the Lightning. But LeCavalier, because he makes $4.5 million a year and he only had 8 goals last year, he's another one of those guys that really I think the Flyers would have been happy to trade, but it almost became that immovable contract. But do you think with Dave Hakstol there, that there's a chance that Vinny LeCavalier can kind of, you know, get his career going again, whether that's on that third line or if it's on the fourth line?
I would love to say yes, because he's such a nice guy and a great player to deal with in the locker room. But, you know, a lot of people say that Hextall's system is really predicated on speed, and Vinny's just not the fastest guy anymore. And, you know, like I said, he's a good guy, and I'd like to see him do well. I don't know if this is the spot for him to do so. And I know it wasn't under Craig Berube. There was obviously miscommunications between the two of them frequently. And I don't know if a new coach will maybe energize the whole locker room and Vinny included, but I don't know if he's got a future in Philadelphia.
Jeff, you mentioned the new coach, and we're familiar with him, Dave Hakstol, having been, you know, very close to us down the road here at the University of North Dakota, and certainly did a terrific job with that program. But have you seen, you know, you went to Temple, you've seen him many times with college coaches and the National Basketball Association. It's not always a guarantee they will succeed. What do you think put it this way, do you think it's a risky hire by the Flyers, and why do you think they were willing to take that risk if you do think it's risky?
I don't think it was a risky hire. I think it was a good hire. For a while here in Philadelphia, we got into a kind of a habit of kind of bringing back some legends of the glory years in Philadelphia in the 70s when they won a Stanley Cup. And it was kind of an outside-of-the-box hire. You know, Hextall definitely did his homework. And I don't think there's anything wrong with bringing a college guy right to the NHL.
His son went to UND too, Jeff.
Right. And Hextall will tell you that they weren't even very close when his son was there, when Brett was there. They didn't really get to know each other that well until interviewing for the job. And I don't know if, you know, that's true or not. They can say whatever they want to say. Obviously, Hextall was very familiar with the system and the coach, given that his son went there. So I don't know. I don't think it's a bad move. Only time will tell if it's a good move. I think it was a move that needed to be done for this organization.
Final question for you, and, you know, Ed Snyder always seems to be a story in Philadelphia. Just how active, Jeff, is he with the team still? Is he as active, maybe not as he was in the 70s and 80s, but is he still pretty active in terms of overseeing everything?
Well, I've only been on the beat since about a month. And the way it's been, I guess, I know, but I've been following the team for a while. Way it's been here for the past, I want to say, year or so, it really just seems like it's Ron Hextall's show, and that Snyder's entrusted Ron to do whatever he needs to do to make this team better. Whether he has, you know, a little say behind the scenes, I don't know, but it's not obvious if that's the case. It's pretty much all Ron.
Jeff Nyberg covers the Philadelphia Flyers for the Philadelphia Daily News. Jeff, thanks very much for doing this. Hopefully it's the first of many times to come.
Jeff, you know,
guys, I appreciate it.
Jeff, before you go, though, we got to mention your predecessor, Frank Saravalli, Great guy. We've got to know him quite a bit. I just saw him at the draft, actually, in Florida.
He snubbed you, I heard.
Now you're employed by the same company, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But, no, Frank's a great guy. We had an opportunity to, when he was in town, to go out for dinner. So I guess what I'm saying is there's
a long
line of Philly writers that we've got to know and taken out for dinner. So when you're in town in Winnipeg, we'll have to get together.
November 7th, guys. I'll see you then.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care of yourself. That's Jeff Nyberg from the Philadelphia Daily News. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, Canadian comedy legend Mike Wilmot. Go check him out. Two shows tonight. Gilbert Gottfried next week at Rumors. Still coming up is Orny Adams in a concert series. Rob Schneider next month as well. And just announced earlier this week, October 15th through 17th, a concert series event featuring Eliza Schlesinger. Fantastic stand-up comedian. Check out her work. A ton of it on Netflix. Also available. I think some of it's available. You can check out clips on YouTube. Go to rumorscomedyclub.com to see more. Tickets went on sale yesterday. They're going to go quickly.
Of course, Gilbert Gottfried wished Drew a happy birthday yesterday because they went to high school together.
Is Eliza, is she the one who was on that Justin Bieber roast?
That wasn't her.
No,
I don't know who was on the Justin Bieber roast. But
the Justin Bieber roast, if you haven't seen that, was hilarious.
Sorry, do you know who I meant to tell you this earlier. You know who Eliza Schlesinger's ex-boyfriend was?
You?
No, Jamie McLennan.
Really?
Yeah, Noodles.
That's awesome.
Yeah, at least according to her Twitter, I think. Anyways, small world. It all comes full circle in the hockey world and the comedy world and everything else. Speaking of the hockey world, let's talk about the New York Rangers. They signed center Derek Stepan to a 6-year, $39 million contract extension, avoiding salary arbitration with him. He gets $6.5 million.
By the way, Richie, you're thinking of Natasha Leggero.
Sorry, yeah, she's really funny.
Okay. Yeah. I had to quickly IMDb'd that.
Okay, that's good. That's good IMDb'ing there. Stepan, 6 years contract. Last year, 16 goals, 39 assists, 55 points in 68 games.
Yep.
Just market value for the Rangers here?
I think it was. Drew, we did break it down. We talked about Derek Stepan when you were away there, and we talked about just needing to get this done. The arbitration, not needing to go arbitration in terms of if you're the Rangers. Why? Because you don't want to have a guy on a short-term deal with the talent of Derek Stepan. So you lock him in at 6.5, Drew, for 6 years. I think that's more than fair value. I think he is, I find him to be an interesting player. He's not dominant really at anything, but he's really good at basically everything. And he's
kind of like you, Richie.
Yeah, he's up the middle, and he was big for them at big moments last year, but he's a talented offensive player. He plays center for the squad, and I think they're going to kind of go at you with these three centers that they have. And if you look at it from that perspective, it's going to be Kevin Hayes, it's going to be him, yep. It's going to be Derek Brassard.
Yep.
Or any of them.
Very strong up the middle.
Top line, number one, Malkin, Crosby's no. But those three players are talented, and they bring you different things. Stepan can, score a little more than Hayes. Brassard, was able to pop goals, but he's probably, I'd still say, more of a playmaker. They add a nice mix. And if you look up the middle, and Brassard has exceeded my expectations, I have to qualify that. And
speaking of the 2006 draft.
Yeah, no, that's it took him a while, though, Ezzy. But, Drew, you get him locked in a 6-year deal from 25 to 31, around that age. There's really little risk, I think. Will he absolutely blow the doors off his contract value-wise? Probably not. But I don't think the risk is that high, and I think you know what you're getting from the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's getting better. And
yeah.
And again, I don't think he's going to take the next step to be dominant player, but I think he's a 1B center probably in the National Hockey League, and with the possibility of becoming just a 1, not a 1A, and I mean by that, like, if there's three levels, he's not going to be that top level. But mm-hmm. He's a real good player, and I think he means a lot to that room as well.
Well, 2 years ago, 57 points in 82 games, and last season, 55 points in 68 games. Yeah. So last year, you know, it was very productive and on a points per game basis.
Absolutely. Right.
But all of the points that Richie makes are 100% accurate, and you know, I realize the 1A, 1B is thrown out a little bit too much, especially with goaltenders. Mm-hmm. But really, it's a good point because Derek Brassard, Rich, is essentially their number one center, you know, playing with Rick Nash on the top line and all that. But Derek Stepan, I think, is a better overall player than Derek Brassard. But, you know, your point is really well taken because really up the middle, you look at those three centers, and in the Eastern Conference, the center position isn't as strong as the Western Conference, you know, with L.A. and Anaheim and Chicago and all that. I guess Chicago, not so much, but Derek Stepan, you know, you mentioned this, he can play, can contribute and be good on the power play, on the penalty kill. Mm-hmm. He can give you 20, 25 minutes. He's a franchise player. And the fact that, you know, he's a 55 to 60 point guy, I think, you know, you got to look a little bit beyond that because especially in this day and age when really the scoring race, 87 points wins you the scoring race, you know, 55 points, he was, you know, top 60 in the NHL in scoring. So I mean,
absolutely, 62nd to be exact.
Yeah, but you look at his point totals, right, Drew, and you say, okay, well, but if you've watched the New York Rangers play, and they're clearly one of the best defensive teams in the NHL, but I mean, this is a team that's fast. And I mean, we saw this, guys, when they went to the finals against the Kings, they lost, but Derek Stepan was a huge part of that. And this past year, he got 12 points in 19 games. I mean, this guy many times he's driving the bus offensively for this team. And I realize, you know, Rick Nash is a great player, and Martin St. Louis retiring. Obviously, they're going to have to replace that, Richie. But I mean, as you said, locking Stepan up was really a no brainer. And you know, they might have given him a little bit more money than you thought or whatever, but the salary cap didn't go up much. So I'm not surprised. You see those kind of third line guys making more money. So I think, you know, Stepan, you look at the money and you say, okay, 6.5, that's a little bit too much money. I don't think it is. I mean, this guy, I think, and to boot, he's going to be a huge part of USA Hockey going forward. He's going to be one of those guys that you can pencil in on the World Cup team, on the Olympic team. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a terrific all-around player.
Sorry to interrupt, Drew. Yeah, I know his goal and assist numbers, you know, there's some similarity in terms of ratio to a guy like Brassard. I do think Stepan can take another step forward in terms of goal scoring. I do believe that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, if he played a full season last year, you would certainly expect that he would have been closer to, you know, 20, 25 goals than the 16 he was at.
Yeah, I think he can be he can really give you some more in the goal category. I do think
performed well in the playoffs last 2 years.
Yeah,
as well.
He did. Brassard did as well. So I mean, you really do. You're really liking down the middle there. You're liking to attack with three guys. You're not. And what you're doing, you know, you hear a lot about top nine forwards. Well, I think you can only attack with a top nine forward. I think that's kind of sometimes an excuse for we don't have Sidney Crosby, which 29 teams don't, right? Having said that, though, you can only attack with a top nine if you have three centers, in my opinion, who can create offense. And all three centers there can create offense.
Absolutely. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to the Vancouver Canucks. They acquired Brandon Sutter, and they signed him to a long-term contract extension. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Lean back.
Sutter on the ice for the Penguins, so they got their full complement of forwards, and there's a chance right in front. Winnick to Sutter, he scores! Brandon Sutter scores another one, and the Penguins lead it 2-0. He came out of the locker room, and he scores a goal with stitches in his face.
That's Brandon Sutter scoring for the Pittsburgh Penguins, now a member of the Vancouver Canucks, now a much wealthier member of the Vancouver Canucks. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg with you as we enter into our second hour of the broadcast. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, Brandon Sutter gets the big contract extension that was pretty much promised after he was acquired by the Canucks. It's a 5-year, $21.875 million contract extension. Going to get paid $4.375 million per season in a salary cap hit. The trade itself was Brandon Sutter and a 2016 third round pick to Vancouver, going to Pittsburgh, Nick Bonino, Adam Clendenning, and a 2016 second round pick. Your thoughts on the price to acquire Brandon Sutter for the Canucks, and then the amount that they paid him for the next 5 years.
Richie, I thought it was a bit of a curious trade, and you know, we got to give a shout out to our boy Mike Colligan. I'll tweet out the link to the article that he wrote on the Hockey Writers about why the Canucks wanted Brandon Sutter. But to me, it was a little curious when I say that, because I think Brandon Sutter is an interesting case, because I think he's failed to live up to the expectations. Not only, and we've talked about this a lot, Richie, I think we were even talking about it 2 weeks ago, he's always been in the shadow of Jordan Staal as the third line center. But I also think, because you know, he's the son of Brent Sutter, and everybody's always expected him to kind of do more. And I think in the winning sense, Richie, I think you look at his, you know, he had his most goals ever last year with 21 goals. I thought he had an excellent year last year, you know, considering that he's not going to get first power play time, and he's going to have those defensive responsibilities, Richie. But I think this trade is curious, because the Vancouver Canucks go out and they trade for Nick Bonino. Well, I mean, you could say Anaheim.
He's part of the Ryan Kessler
right,
deal.
Right, Anaheim more so traded to get Ryan Kessler, but Nick Bonino was part of that along with Lucas Ebizer, right? Mm-hmm. And the Vancouver Canucks clearly wanted Brandon Sutter, and Pittsburgh loses the salary. Gains, I guess, the cap room, but loses the salary. And Nick Bonino now slots in as their third line center, potentially, you know, if he needs to. Maybe Richie plays wing. But it's an interesting case, because I think I actually like the trade for Pittsburgh. Clendenning is a guy who, you know, he's more of a depth defenseman, but they get him as well. And for Vancouver, I'm curious to know. See, Rich, I look at it and I say, I see Vancouver thinking that Sutter can pencil in as the second line center. But he's never really proven that yet. And I think he's struggled at times in the third line center role. The guy's got a lot of talent, and he has that two-way game. But the knock on Brandon Sutter for me has always been sometimes he's not engaged physically or engaged at all in the game. And that's why I think we haven't really seen the best of Brandon Sutter. And I realize, you know, 26, you know, he's not 21 years old anymore. But for me, it's a little bit of a curious move, because I think Nick Bonino, I think we'd agree, is arguably offensively more talented than Brandon Sutter. But Brandon Sutter has that two-way element to his game. So I can see why Vancouver's doing it, but I don't necessarily know that making this move, Rich, makes Vancouver a better team. Like, I know they want Brandon Sutter to be Ryan Kessler, but
right.
I don't think he's Ryan Kessler.
Well, I agree with you. He's not as physical. So his name wasn't Sutter. What would he make? How much money would he make? I think that's the question. Now, so take a step back and you say, okay, let's look at the trade from both sides, as he just did. Nick Bonino, guys, is not a second-line center in the National Hockey League on a contending team. I really like Nick Bonino. He can kill penalties. He can play on the power play. He's a seventh forward on a really good team. And by that, I mean he's a guy who can drop in at wing if you need him to, play a few games, drop in at center if you need him to, drop him in on the special teams that I just said. But he's not big enough and reliable enough to be that second-line guy. He just isn't, okay? So I think he fits better into what Pittsburgh's doing than what Vancouver's doing. In Pittsburgh, he slots behind all the forwards, Kessel, Malkin, Crosby, all those guys, okay? Mm-hmm. No pressure. He'll succeed for sure, similar to how he did in Anaheim. But think about it from that perspective. The Anaheim Ducks traded Bonino for Kessler amongst, you know, Spezza and other guys, okay? If they thought he was a second-line center on a cup-winning team, wouldn't they have just kept
him? Probably.
Okay. So they made the move. Vancouver gets him again, amongst other guys. Now, they flip Bonino over to, now I know there's other parts as well, to Pittsburgh. So again, I think Bonino fits well in Pittsburgh. The question then is Sutter. Sutter was acquired for Staal, and again, Pouliot as well, who's hopefully going to emerge if you're Pittsburgh this year, Derek Pouliot, acquired to fill the role Jordan Staal did. The third line center behind two All-Stars who sometimes play together and sometimes you have to play second line center. Different player than Jordan Staal. Skates better than Jordan Staal. I don't think not as willing to engage physically, as he said. So if we go back to how we dealt with the Sean Couturier contract, a guy who's 3 years younger, 23, 26. different players. I think Couturier is willing to be more physical and has proven, I think, to be a more effective checking line center in playoff roles against really good players. But if you're thinking Brown and Sutter is going to play second line, then the 4.3 you have him for is probably a bargain, okay? But if he's not, then you're overpaying him. And if you want to pay your third line center $3 million, then you're getting a 1.3 hit every year. So there's risk in it. I don't love Brandon Sutter. I totally agree with Ezzy's comments about him. Not the most consistent. And I said at the top of this, I don't know if his name was different, would he be getting the attention and money that he's getting?
And I think at times, you know, I remember we had Mike Lang, who's the radio voice of the Pittsburgh Penguins, on. We were talking to him about mm-hmm. Brandon Sutter. I've obviously been a huge fan of Brent Sutter, you know, Red Deer Rebels, and he was the Devils coach a little bit there. But to me, he needs to be with the right teammates, Rich. You know, we've talked about this over the years with Evander Kane. He's one of those players that because he's probably, you'd say, more of a shooter than a playmaker, even though he's got that element to his game, he needs to be, if he's going to be on your third line, especially on Pittsburgh, he had this revolving door of line mates, right? And he always struggled, I think, with the consistency. And I see what Jim Bannion and Trevor Linden are doing there. They clearly think that he's an upgrade over Bonino. They wouldn't have made the trade mm-hmm. if that wasn't the case. And Jim Rutherford wants to make the trade because he doesn't want to sign him to a contract extension.
But an upgrade also has in the sense of what the roster need is. Like, I don't think if Vancouver has Kessler here, I don't think they make this trade.
No.
Well, I think that's what they're doing,
well, Drew. And I look at the rest of the – and, hey, look, you look at Vancouver and they were in the playoffs. We all picked Calgary to beat them in the playoffs. I think Vancouver is an excellent team. But I think that forward
depth—they're
kind of in the semi-rebuild, and Bo Horvat, you know, they want to ease him in slowly, so he can't play second line center yet, so he'll play probably third line center. You know, he's very young and he's an excellent player, but the team, I think, the surrounding cast, I think, especially up the middle, I mean, they're young and they're not as strong as they used to be, and I'm just not, you know, Vancouver to me is a team. I'm not sure if they get back into the playoffs. I think it's going to be tough for them.
But you mentioned Horvat's more important because Horvat, they hope to eventually be the second line center, but now they want to have him have less pressure. And say he elevates to that role in 2 years. Well, you're paying him entry level salary for 2 years combined with Sutter. If he eventually jumps over him mm-hmm. and gets more money, then you're dealing with a cap problem a little bit later on.
Yep.
I don't love this contract by any means, but I know Jim Benning is getting killed for it. Yep. I don't love the contract. But I can see his rationale, getting bigger and getting faster in the Western Conference with a guy, you're getting a Western Canadian boy back into his comfort zone, and you're putting him with a coach in Willie Desjardins, who's known for being overly loyal to his players and sticking them through slumps and leaning on them in a development aspect.
Is he that much better than Nick Bonino? I mean, Bonino outscored him last year. I know they're different. But, I mean, given what he... You know, he paid to acquire him, and then given what the contract is, I have trouble believing that it's the price they paid both in assets and then in dollars makes this a smart deal for Vancouver.
Well, I think Rich nailed it, though. I mean, I think it is that simple, though. I think that Bonino, you might give the edge a little bit. Like, a guy like Bonino, you can put on the power play, and he'll probably, on a yearly basis, he'll outscore Brandon Sutter. Because he's more of a skill player. Not that Brandon Sutter doesn't have skill. He scored 21 goals last year. But I think Brandon Sutter, he's the type of guy, better face-off guy. He's more of a defensive forward. And he's more physical.
But they're paying him to score.
But I agree with Rich. He isn't, for example, compare Brandon Sutter to Adam Lowry. I mean, he's not even as close to as physical as Adam Lowry. That's what I've always wanted out of Brandon Sutter. Because the reason, you know, make that comparison. When Pittsburgh won the Cup in 2009... They're up the middle was, I mean, it was ridiculous. They might have had the best three centers of the last decade with Malkin, Crosby, Staal. Because Staal, not only could Staal score a big goal, but Staal had that kind of Adam Lowry physical element to his game. And Sutter hasn't had that, so you want him to have that role. And I think he'll be fine next year on Vancouver, but I don't know if he'll necessarily do that much more and be that much of an upgrade over Bonino that it gets them back into the playoffs again.
Bonino's making 1.9 a year. Okay, Bonino is great value. Okay,
yep,
he's great value. 1.9 a year for the next 2 years. He's old. You know, he's 27. Mm-hmm. Not much older than Sutter.
Well, Sutter's 26, but yeah,
exactly.
Pretty much the same.
But they're just so different in terms of what you're trying to do. Vancouver's trying to change their whole roster.
Yep. Yeah,
I get that they're different. My problem.
I mean, I love the trade from Pittsburgh's perspective.
Sure,
for sure. I think it's a great trade from Pittsburgh's perspective. You cut salary because you probably still need to add a defenseman here in some form, because I think their forward group looks really good right now. Really good. I like the Fair addition.
Yeah.
I mean, Bonino trade is really good. I like the Matt Cullen addition. Doesn't hurt. Jim Rutherford's certainly, you know, aware of what he can do in Carolina. Yep. Again, he's past his prime by, you know, clearly is, and almost retired there. But from the Vancouver's perspective also, you're in a faster conference. You're in a bigger, more physical conference. Again, he needs to play more physically. Maybe they think that's in him. I think it's hard to change the fabric of a player. I don't think that's something you want to be investing in. Having said that, as he mentioned, he scored 20 goals. And sure, the pucks are going in a little more last year than years past. But if he gets you 15 and 25, it's an overpay. But with Horvat there on a cheap, maybe you're thinking, okay, you know, in time, Horvat will pass him. Horvat's a tremendous skater. You know, Sutter adds a speed size element. You're changing the complexion of your roster. I don't love it. I like it more for Pittsburgh than I do for Vancouver, but I can see Vancouver's perspective. I don't hate it as much as other people do.
My biggest problem with it is you're paying a guy to be a second line center. You're paying him second line center money when he's never proven before that he can be a bona fide second line center.
And that's going to be the key to their season this year, Drew. The defense has got to be better, because Vancouver, when they were, you know, going to the Stanley Cup, you know, 4 years ago, or I guess it was 5 years ago, that was kind of the foundation of their team, right? And it struggled, and, you know, they moved on with Kevin Bieksa, and you know, they're just not as, they can't rely on that much more, Rich. And so, as to your point, they kind of moved towards more of a skill team, but now they want to get back to that, you know, having that big second line physical center. But I think you'd want to see, it's a big year for Sutter. You want to see him embrace that role, and that'll ultimately determine if they have a better year this year. And I think with Dallas improving, and, you know, even Colorado improving, it's going to be tough for them. But I mean, he's 26 years old. I mean, he's got a lot of hockey in front of him. But the point is, I think to this point, he's underwhelmed you a little bit, because you've always expected a little bit more out of Brandon Sutter. Maybe it's because of his name. Maybe it's because he replaced Jordan Staal. But you've always expected, I think, more, and he hasn't given that yet.
He's got 7 seasons in this league. I think we know what Brandon Sutter is. I mean, how many times do we say on this show?
He's a great hockey player, Drew. After
X number of years, you are what you are.
I don't love Brandon Sutter, Drew. Okay. And the problem is, you acquire a guy with pending UFA, so you have to lock him up. Otherwise, you know, what are you doing? I understand that. And the value for Bonino was way better. So would I have attacked it differently if I were Vancouver, keeping Bonino or using somebody else to get that player? Probably. Mm-hmm. I can see their perspective, as I'm saying. I don't hate it as much as, because if he's just awful, he probably gives you $2.5 million of value. I'm just guessing. So you're getting killed. You're not getting killed on there. You're not getting like Alexander Semin killed on it.
Right.
But you're getting hurt on it.
It's not an 8 year, $64 million.
Because at least you know, guys. At least you know, Ezzy, at the end of the day, you can drop him into a checking role.
Yeah.
And he can be effective to an extent.
And just in case anybody from the Sutter family is listening, because there are 500 of them. Mm-hmm. I like Brandon Sutter, but I'm just saying, I think on a good team, Pittsburgh, on an even better team, Chicago, I think he's a third-line center. He's got to prove that he can take that next step and be a second-line center. And I think Rich makes a good point. A second-line center on a Canadian team, there's going to be a lot more pressure on him because of the fact that, as you mentioned, he's from Alberta, and everyone's going to be expecting him to take that next step. Hey, there's no reason why he can't do it, because he had his best year last year, you know, as far as goals go, but you know, I think the jury's out. I'm not sure who's going to win that trade.
Did you guys watch Vancouver play last year? They were so slow up front.
Mm-hmm.
And they had nothing to them. Okay? I mean, aside from Horvat, he came in there. But like,
yeah, the Sedins cycled the puck for 20 minutes, and that was that.
Yeah, but Verbata's not adding your speed element. Burrows is getting up there. He's 34 years old now. Okay? I mean, I know Hansen is a good skater. But you're looking at a team that didn't have enough speed up front, wasn't getting on the opposition. And you can't win the league now if you can't move. And so Bonino didn't help them enough in that regard, in the sense that, sure, he's a good player, but they're trying to change the roster. So at some point, you're going to overpay guys. And again, I'm not necessarily defending. I'm explaining, I think, what their rationale is. We're trying to change what this team is all about. And the Sedins aren't what they were. I mean, they had good seasons, but they aren't what they were years and years ago.
Yeah, they're 35, 36 years old.
And so how are you going to go about doing it? Is this the right way? Well, I don't know if it's the right way, but I can see what they're trying to do.
It'll be interesting to see how the Canucks season unfolds as we enter into the regular season in about 2 months' time from now. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the New Jersey Devils. They signed one of their young defensemen to a lengthy contract extension. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday. on TSN 1290.
This is an easy one. Hang on. Well, Corey's testing me today.
Well, let me explain what's going to happen over the next three segments. Between producer Corey and Bruce Springsteen aficionado Richard Pollock, I guess we... What are we calling this? The Bruce Springsteen Challenge?
Well, after I... screwed up three weeks ago now. I have to make amends.
So you're going to do the next three segments. It'll be the Bruce Springsteen Challenge.
Glory Days?
No, it's not Glory Days, but that's a good guess, Ezzy. Anyways, before you give us the answer, which you know here, Richard, yeah. The segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
By the way,
go ahead.
Hopefully, well, this is Dentist's bus stop at 82nd Street. Greetings to Asbury Park. But I will say this.
That's correct for the record.
Yes. By the way, apparently this Bernstein's Illegal Curve sandwich is finally going to be coming out. It's been
I was going to say, Richie.
It's like Dr. Dre's third album, for God's sake.
Yeah. Straight out of Bernstein's Deli, coming up in early October.
Coinciding with the hockey season beginning, right?
Coinciding with that and coinciding with Gary Lawless losing his mind is the Illegal Curve Sandwich, the debut, the renaissance, if you will, of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, but also, Drew, coming up in about 4 weeks is the return of Le Burger Week.
Ooh.
If you remember last year...
It was a delicious burger.
Bernstein's Deli had finished second, actually.
Yeah, it was a great burger.
In the city to... it doesn't matter because they should have won. But Le Burger Week is coming up, so Aaron Bernstein, our good friend, is going to be supplying us with their new burger coming up. So that's also obviously going to coincide with my BMI continuing to rise.
Are you part of that? Like, you know, somehow, you know, they have the political think tanks right now with all these debates. Are you part of the burger think tank?
Yeah, he's part of the burger analysis team, the instant analysis afterwards.
Yeah, they come to me when they really want to know if something, like if they should add, you know, some schmaltz onto the burger.
Hustler should have like a burger debate, like four different parties and host it.
It should be like me, Remus.
Dude Love.
I think your brother Adam should be on that committee, that panel. I think Drew should be there as well.
Yeah,
you like a nice burger.
I do like a nice burger. It's true. You can't fault me for that. But I'm good on the burger panel.
There's exciting
things
happening in the deli world, and Illegal Curve will be there to break all the news.
Yes, and speaking of breaking news, that's not really breaking news, I guess. But the New Jersey Devils signed RFA defenseman Adam Larson to
That was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, but we haven't been on air. To a 6-year, $25 million contract. Salary cap hit of $4.167 million. You know, Adam Larson's sort of an interesting player. This is a guy who was drafted quite high, of course, in the first round, I believe, fourth overall. And for the longest time, you know, was bandied about, you know, bust maybe, wasn't developing. Uh-huh. And then, you know, towards the end of last year, he sort of began to, you know, come into his own and was rewarded for it in the offseason with this contract. Are you surprised at the term and the dollar amount involved here?
I am a little bit, Richie, and, you know, I follow the Devils. If you listen to the show, you know, I follow the Devils a little bit more closely than your average person. And that was tough to do last year because they were really bad. Adam Larson is a guy, you know, you mentioned, you know, he was being talked about as a bus candidate, which I think is ridiculous. He's 22 years old.
Yeah, way too early.
And especially for a defenseman, Drew. Adam Larson shouldn't have come into the NHL at his age, I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever should have been there, Drew, and I think there were pressures to bring him in there because New Jersey has been rebuilding that defense basically since Scott Niedermeyer left. Like, no joke. I mean, they have really struggled on the back end, and, you know, hopefully Bryce Salvador plays, but, you know, he's kind of led that defense there with Andy Green, and now you're really seeing that influx of youth with guys like Eric Jelena and Damon Severson and the aforementioned Adam Larson.
Damon Severson, it was his birthday yesterday as well.
Yeah, Brandon boy.
Same with Sidney Crosby.
Yep.
And Mike Trout.
True.
And then Drew ate a little trout for dinner. So, back to Adam Larson, though, Richie, because, you know, this show is getting off the rails very quickly here with all this pierogi and deli talk. But Adam Larson is a guy that he's got incredible wheels. And I know Pete DeBoer, you know, struggled with really using him last year. And then when Lou Lamoriello went behind the bench, he started to really excel. And then, you know, they had Scott Stevens there. He played better. I don't think you maybe excel is a strong word, Richie, but I think Larson is a guy, to your point last segment, Rich, he can move the puck.
Yep.
And he's got a good shot, and he's got a good vision of the game. He, at times, has decision-making issues. That's always been my problem with Adam Larson. I don't necessarily know at this point he's thought the game at a high enough level to be a consistent defenseman in the NHL.
Peter DeBoer didn't like him, is he?
No,
let's be honest.
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. No, he didn't play him. He was a healthy scratch, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he ended up playing 60 or so games this year for the Devils. But so it surprises me, Drew, a little bit that he got that term. Not so much that, you know, the cap hit, because I think, you know, he's coming off of an entry-level deal. But, yeah, I mean, you're giving a guy a lot of years. But I think they gave him the years, Richie, because they don't have after Severson and after Jelena, who I believe Jelena got 2 years, they don't have a lot of guys ready to come in the system because they're all playing in the NHL. Like, Andy Green's getting up there. Salvador's got one or two years left. He just had a terrible injury this past year. You know, Zdlicky's gone. I mean, it's almost like they looked at this and they said, we got to sign somebody to a long-term deal here.
That's an interesting point, Ez. Yeah, I look at it. I see the upside here.
Yep.
The upside is if he comes into his own, you have a really good young defenseman in his mid-20s at a cap hit of 4.1, and it gives you a ton of flexibility to do what you want. Similar to Sutter, but it's certainly way more upside here in terms of, like, if he's that bad, does he provide you with $1.5 million, $2 million of value, and is that the hit you're taking, you know, $2 million on value?
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of similar to Travis Hamonic, too.
That's exactly the name I was just going to bring out is Travis Hamonic in terms of the value.
Hamonic's a better defenseman.
Hamonic contract, you knew what you had then.
Right.
He's way more physical. He's a shutdown guy. Hamonic's contract was grand larceny by the Islanders, who have done a great job of getting great value on their players for long-term deals. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at Larson, Pete DeBoer, as we just mentioned, didn't trust him. Now, I know P.K. Subban was asking for way more money, but the idea that the Montreal Canadiens were not convinced P.K. Subban was worth what he was asking for, I thought would have applied here in the sense that Ray Shiro jumps in. Does he know as much about Adam Larson as Lou Lamoriello did? No. Okay? How much has he watched him? Probably not much. He's bringing in new staff as well, is he? Okay? I just think, personally, I want to see what Adam Larson brings to the table. If Adam Larson is tremendous, I'll sign him to a 2-year deal. I'll give him $2.5-3 million a year. I know arbitration was coming up with Larson, right?
Yeah. He was arbitration eligible. Yeah. They avoided arbitration with this contract.
So you're looking at a guy who's played, he had 4 NHL seasons accrued. So you sign him to a 2-year deal. He's still got one more year of arbitration eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, actually, what you'd have is his contract would expire. And yeah, he'd have one more year of arbitration eligibility. Then he'd be a UFA. But I would want to see, what can you do in these 2 years? And if you're dominant, I'll pay you 6 or 7. I would rather do that than pay you the 4.1.
Over the 6 years.
Yeah, and that may end up being tremendous. See, Larson, to me, even when he was playing on the junior team, when I was able to see him play against Canada, I mean, he was spotty. He was always drafted based on what he could be. So I'm not sure if he's going to provide, I mean, if he dominates, he's going to provide value for sure. I just don't know what level of dominating we're talking about here. I just think Ray Shiro, who's loyal, we know he's loyal, but I think he should have taken a little more cautious approach and say, hey, Adam Larson, we'll give you 2 years here. And I know arbitration was a factor. Even go on the year. We'll go to arbitration with you. We'll have a year contract.
He still has,
right? Depending on what, you know,
still
hold, one or two
they
year
still
option,
maintain his rights.
One
so.
Or 2 year option there, right? Yeah. You retain it for 1 or 2 more years, depending on what contract would be. I don't remember who was the player declared or team declared.
It was team declared. I think there was only one player. It might have been player because there was only one team. Wasn't that Bernier?
Yeah, I believe so.
Was the only player where the Leafs took him to arbitration?
Yeah. So you look at it, Drew, and you say, well, let's go. Let's see how dominant he can be. And if he is, then next year we have arbitration. We still have his rights for a couple more seasons, and we'll see if we can negotiate a longer-term deal. I just think teams are so willing to pay players before they've actually established that value. No, I mean, that does apply, guys, to... See, it applies more to me to Sutter than does to Couturier, but I just think this contract was a little bit premature. Having said that all, the guy didn't play any power play last year, so points is going to be deceiving.
Yep.
and he's big. And, you know, as he talks about the decision-making issue, but there's a lot of good things to look at here with Adam Larson. I just would have approached it in the way of prove it, then we'll pay you.
It was player-elected arbitration.
It's definitely somewhat of a gamble because you don't necessarily know that they, when you sign a guy to a six-year contract, you hope that he's going to be a bona fide top pairing defenseman for you. You're not signing, or at the very least, top four, right?
Sure.
And you just don't know that he can do that on a consistent basis.
That's right.
But I do think, you know, he was rushed into the NHL as an 18-year-old. Mm-hmm. And I think, to Richie's point, you know, at 22 years old, we've yet to see his best. He'll get more opportunity under John Hines. He'll get more power play time. But it is somewhat of a gamble. And it's Ray Shiro's first big contract signing.
I just wonder, for
the Devils.
Yeah, like he looks down and he says, okay, well, I'm going to sign this guy to a long-term deal. Like, what made him say, I got to sign this guy to a long-term deal? What made him say, I'm going to get great value here?
And my simple answer to that the only reason I can come up with is because they don't have a plethora of defensemen in the system, and they looked at it and they said, aside from Severson, aside from Jelena, he said, I want to have somebody locked up here. And I agree, Rich, this was a perfect scenario for a bridge deal.
Wasn't it?
I think Subban won a Norris Trophy. There's no bridge deal there. I mean, he won the Norris.
He got the bridge deal. Then he got the Norris. Yeah.
Right. He won the Norris after. But I think everyone could see, at least I could, and you could, mm-hmm. that Subban's an elite defenseman.
But if like Galchenyuk's getting a bridge deal,
Larson's not an elite defenseman at this point.
Yeah. Why are they not giving this guy a bridge deal? I just think that sometimes they don't use the system well enough. And again, we could be wrong. He could be great next year.
Yeah, it's high risk, high reward. Because I mean, you look at him, and he has the God given ability that he could be. I don't want to say Niklas Lidström just because he's Swedish.
No.
But, I mean, the guy has the size and the skating. But, again, he's got to put it all together, and he's still young. So, you know, the jury's still out.
And Pete DeBoer is not a stupid guy, guys.
Yeah, we'll see.
And he needed defenseman. I know we want to go to break, Drew.
Yeah.
He needed defenseman, though. They had no defenseman.
And he still didn't play him, is what you're saying.
He's hardly playing him.
Yeah. Well, but the flip side is that when DeBoer was fired and Larson started and Larson got ice time, he played well.
I'm sure
Tommy Albelin was playing defense for the Devils last year.
And I'm not saying DeBoer is the only answer there. Again, I just at the end of the day, I would sign him to a 1 or 2 year deal, and if he proves it, then I'd be happy to pay him. Like, I think these guys should be happy to pay top end young defensemen if they prove it.
Sure.
But to pay him before they prove it seems a little bit premature to
foolhardy,
me.
Foolhardy, definitely. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Colorado Avalanche. Drew Spivak from ESPNDenver.com is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Twenty-five minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been the city's number one hockey shop, plus so much more like soccer, baseball, bikes, skateboards, as well as having the city's largest selection of athletic and casual footwear. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me.
It's the price you pay.
2 for 2 on the Bruce Springsteen intro song challenge.
That's a hard one.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Drew Spivak. Drew is the host of ESPN Denver's Sports Night. He's also the Colorado Avalanche NHL reporter for 105.5 ESPN Radio in Denver and ESPNDenver.com.
But Drew, how big of a fan of Bruce Springsteen is Drew, though?
Drew, how big of a fan of Bruce Springsteen are you?
I got to be honest, guys. I'm not a huge fan of Bruce Springsteen. He doesn't really do it for me.
You know you're going to get your reporter credential immediately revoked as a result of that.
I know. I've heard that before. Trust me, guys. I've tried. I've tried to get on board the Springsteen bandwagon. I just can't do it.
Drew, in your defense, though, I wasn't a big Springsteen guy. And then I went to see Springsteen in Minneapolis with Richie and Drew, and it changed everything. Seeing his live show with the E Street Band changed everything. So I'm just saying, if you have a chance to check him out, that might sway you.
There we go. Yeah, that might be the trick. I'll have to definitely do that next time he swings through Denver.
There you go. Drew obviously brought you on to talk about the Colorado Avalanche, an extremely busy offseason for the Avs after last year's disappointing season. You know, let's start with the Ryan O'Reilly trade to Buffalo. Ryan O'Reilly and Jamie McGinn go to Buffalo. They acquire Zadorov, Grigorenko, J.D. Compher, and a 2015 second-round pick. How did you think the Avs did in terms of return for Ryan O'Reilly?
Yeah, I think given the circumstances and all the, you know, kind of the complications around the Ryan O'Reilly contract situation, really three different times in this whole thing, and I think the Avalanche did probably as good as they could do to get a return on a guy that most likely wasn't going to re-sign here. It was going to be another contentious negotiation with the team, and I feel like they got the best return they possibly could for him. Getting a guy like Zadorov, who I think the Avalanche were really excited about, getting a big young defenseman that's only just 20 years old. He can play on that left side, which is something the Avalanche desperately needed. I think they got to be pretty happy with the return on him. If he can turn into the player that I think he's kind of been hyped up to be and a lot of people thought he was going to be, if he can end up being that guy for the Avalanche, I think at the end of the day it's going to be a big win for Colorado. I mean, it's unfortunate they had to lose O'Reilly because he was such a good player here for such a long time, and it's crazy to think that he's just 24 years old. It feels like he's been around the league forever now, but losing him is definitely going to be a loss. But if Zadorov and Grigorenko can bring something to this team, I mean, who knows with J.T. Comfort being the prospect and the kid playing at the University of Michigan right now. It's hard to kind of look ahead towards him, but I think overall, I think they did a nice job and they got a decent return for him given all the circumstances overall.
Drew, I agree with you. I think Nikita Zadorov is the key piece there for the Colorado Avalanche, who are obviously trying to address the defense position because that was a weakness for them. We talked to you a lot about it last year on the show, and I think J.T. Compher as well is a prospect, even though we don't know you know, what he's going to turn out to be. I think, you know, the scouts certainly like him. But I wanted to ask you, you know, Grigorenko, you mentioned Mikhail Grigorenko. How much of an impact did Patrick Waugh's history with Grigorenko have on acquiring him? And do you think he'll be able to turn him around? Because in Buffalo, he really fell out of favor there in Buffalo, didn't he?
Yeah, he really did. And I think that the Waugh's kind of, you know, I think Patrick Waugh did have some sort of an influence in that whole thing going down and bringing him here. And no, I think he's going to get an opportunity here to really prove himself and come in and have an opportunity to play, you know, right away with Colorado. I mean, you kind of forget about Grigorenko that he's still a pretty young guy too. He's another guy that feels like he's been around for a while, and he's going to get an opportunity with Colorado to come in and be an impact type player right away and probably start maybe on the third or fourth line with this Avalanche team. And it's something that they really need. I mean, we talked about the defense being so kind of bad last year for Colorado and the way they needed to improve the defense. Well, you know, the depth of this team for Colorado really needed to be improved as well, because the top two lines were pretty good for Colorado last year. I mean, it's overall not great, not what they were 2 years ago, but the top two lines were pretty decent for this team. And you look down to the bottom six for Colorado, they really need the help. And getting a guy like Grigorenko who can score, who can skate, he's going to be a big part of this team, I think, going forward. So hopefully he comes in and he can improve and be the guy that he was hyped up to be from the get-go.
Drew, how much of a factor was it, I could say if any, but it seems like it was at least some factor, the offer sheet that Ryan O'Reilly signed a few years back with the Flames, that the Avalanche had to match and then kind of threw the salary structure, upside down?
Yeah, I think that was a huge factor. The Avalanche never wanted to pay him what Calgary had offered him. I don't think they ever looked at Ryan O'Reilly as being that type of player. And I think if you look around the league, the way people talk about him, he was never really worth, you know, $6 million a year, although I guess Buffalo gave him around $7 million now. So they obviously think so. But it's hard to kind of gauge Ryan O'Reilly's value because he's not a prolific goal scorer. A lot of the things that Ryan O'Reilly does, you don't see on the stat sheet every single night. I mean, you look at his numbers, I think he had 55 points last year, which is good, but it's not great for a guy that's going to be making $7 million a year. So, you know, it kind of skews his value a little bit, but you look at the different things that he does. He's a very, very good, one of the top defensive forwards in the game. He wins faceoffs. He can play on the penalty kill. He can play on the power play. So he's got a lot of value to him. It's just, I think the Avalanche never looked at it. They didn't really want to pay him more than, let's say, a guy like Matt Duchene or Gabriel Landeskog, or maybe at some point here in the near future, a Nathan MacKinnon. So it was always kind of hard to gauge his value, but there's no question that the offer sheet that Calgary gave him a couple years ago really just kind of threw a huge wrinkle on everything that they had going with Ryan O'Reilly moving forward.
You mentioned Duchene and MacKinnon, and that's part of the core of the squad, of course, Drew. They have played, both have played wing at times, and both are, you know, maybe two of the top 20, 15 skaters in the National Hockey League. Some would probably say even higher than that, especially MacKinnon with the puck. Well, both of them with the puck on their stick, which is hard to keep up that speed. Are these guys going to be the one and two centers for the squad, or is wing still a possibility for one or both of them?
It seems like right now Matt Duchene's going to be the number one center for this team, and we'll see kind of how things shake out in training camp as far as who he's paired with. I tend to think he's going to be with Iginla and Tange a lot like he was last year. But Nathan MacKinnon's kind of the interesting one because he was drafted as a center. He played as a center in junior, and he's been given an opportunity to play center a little bit here in Colorado. And honestly, he hasn't been great at it. He's really struggled, especially the defensive end of the ice. And there was a game last year where he got benched in the third period because he was struggling so badly defensively. I think it was the Dallas game. I believe in March of last year, and he got
the
finished,
Jets
and then
too.
He started the next. Yeah, and he started the next game on the fourth line. So it seems to me like right now the plan for Nathan MacKinnon is to start on the right wing. Patrick Lange, Joe Sakic said after they made the signing of Carl Soderberg that MacKinnon was going to be the second line right winger with Soderberg as the second line center. So I thought that was kind of interesting that he's going to start on that right side to begin the season. I mean, I think in an ideal world, the Avalanche would like to have their top three centers as Duchene, MacKinnon, and then Carl Soderberg. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be something where MacKinnon's really going to have to kind of earn that spot and move over. I'm not necessarily convinced that in the long term, based on what I've seen from MacKinnon so far in his early career, that he's going to be a center. But I think we'll have to kind of wait and see how that whole thing plays out.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Drew Spivak, who covers the Colorado Avalanche for ESPNDenver.com, as well as ESPN Radio in Denver. And Drew, you mentioned Carl Soderberg, and the Avalanche acquired him from the Bruins right before he was set to be a free agent, and they signed him to a lengthy contract. It's a $4.75 million cap hit per season for the next 5 years. You know, how surprised were you, because that seems as though the Avs sort of made that a priority this offseason in getting Soderberg to be apparently the second-line center. How surprised were you that was the decision that the Avalanche front office and head coach Patrick Roy made entering into free agency?
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise for me was the amount of money that they gave him. I mean, he was a guy that was playing predominantly on the third line for Boston last year, and, you know, to give him almost $5 million, it seemed like a lot of money, but I think they knew kind of from the get-go with the whole Soderberg thing that he was going to be a guy to have to come in and replace Ryan O'Reilly. I think they saw the writing on the wall with O'Reilly that they were going to have to move him, and they needed to find some sort of a way to kind of fill that void. And that's not to say that Carl Soderberg's anywhere close to what Ryan O'Reilly was, but you got to kind of fill that void with him. And so I think it was a good move by Colorado. I think they needed to bring a guy like that in. He's a good player. I'm not sure he's $4.7 million good, but I think he's going to get a better opportunity here in Colorado than maybe he got in Boston with the amount of depth that the Bruins had last year. But I think overall, I think it was a good move for him. Now we'll see if he's good enough to play on the second line, which, like I said, it sounds like the Avalanche are going to start him off with to begin the season.
Now, Drew, we talked about the Ryan O'Reilly trade with Buffalo, of course, and, you know, Carl Soderberg signing him to the 5-year deal, and the other big moves, signing Blake Como, signing Francois Beauchemin. When you look at the offseason as a whole, what Patrick Roy has done, bringing in the free agents and making the big trade with Ryan O'Reilly, as you mentioned, there was no desire there to sign Ryan O'Reilly for that amount of money. Do you think the Colorado Avalanche have done enough to get them back into the playoffs next year?
Honestly, guys, I don't think so. I mean, it's going to be so difficult to get back in. I mean, you look at the Central Division alone and how good it is, and everybody else mm-hmm. seems like in the division got better. You look at the moves that Dallas made in the offseason, and I think Winnipeg's gotten better in the offseason. It's really difficult to make that jump up. I mean, I look at the top eight teams in the West last year, and I try and kind of think, okay, well, who didn't do enough to kind of stay in that top eight? And the only team I can really see that they could likely fall out of that top eight is Vancouver, and you figure, well, all right, who's going to be the team to replace them? And you look at immediately at Dallas, you look at LA, you try to look at Colorado. And while I think the Avalanche did get better, I'm not sure how much better they got. I mean, you bring in a guy like Francois Beauchemin, who's 35 years old. He's probably going to play top pairing minutes with Eric Johnson next year. And I think the big question for me is, can he do that? Can he play 25 minutes a night throughout the duration of the season at 35 years old? I kind of have my doubts with it, but that to me was kind of the interesting signing of the offseason. I think we all here in Colorado thought they were going to go after a Johnny Oduya. They were going to go after an Andre Sequeira, and they didn't do that. They brought in a veteran kind of stay-at-home type defenseman in Beauchemin, and I thought it was kind of a curious move for this team, to say the least. But I think overall, I think they did get better. I'm not sure if they got good enough to jump back into that top eight in the Western Conference.
We talked about McKinnon before, Drew, and you mentioned that Deshane's kind of locked in there, you think, with the two players you mentioned. McKinnon on the wing, how much of a factor do you think having no Paul Stastny was for him, as opposed to the problems that the Avalanche had on the back end moving the puck to really all their forwards?
Yeah, I think losing Stastny was huge. I think it was a big detriment to this team last year, and I don't think a lot of us here in Denver really fully appreciated just what Paul Stastny brought to this team until he was gone. I mean, he's another guy kind of like Ryan O'Reilly that didn't do a lot on the score sheet. I mean, he put up decent numbers, but he didn't put up astronomical-type numbers. But he did all the little things. He was good defensively. He was a great setup man for guys like Landeskog and McKinnon, as we saw 2 years ago when the Avalanche made their playoff run. So I think it was a huge loss for him. And I think McKinnon kind of valued having Stastny to be that guy that was very unselfish and willing to put the puck on McKinnon's stick and put him in great scoring opportunities and do all the things defensively. That way McKinnon didn't have to do all those things in his rookie season. And we saw the drop-off last year. Nathan McKinnon was not even close to the same player last year as he was in his rookie season. So now I think it's up to Patrick Waugh and Joe Sakic to kind of find a guy that can be like a Paul Stastny to kind of help McKinnon out with those type of things. And whether Carl Soderberg is that guy, I think it kind of remains to be seen. I think the Avalanche are banking on it, and they're hoping so. But I think it's a big question mark moving forward for this team.
I'm really interested in this McKinnon thing, just watching him last year. Drew, do you think that Stastny slowed him down a little bit more than this year when he was kind of playing at his own pace and it didn't seem like players were able to keep up and then he started to do things on his own too much?
No question. Yeah, I think that was a huge part of it. The game kind of seemed like it moved way too fast for him last year, and he was trying to do too many things individually, and it was kind of a detriment that nobody could really kind of keep up with him and do the type of things that McKinnon was wanting to do. So I don't think there's any question that was something that was huge for Paul Stastny, being able to kind of slow the game down for McKinnon and bring the game to him. And it's kind of weird just kind of how the Avalanche trying to balance the lines of the last year, trying to find a fit, trying to find a good partner for McKinnon. I don't think they quite found it. They had him with Ginla at times. They have him with Duchesne every once in a while. They put him with John Mitchell, and they could never really kind of find that guy to put as the center for McKinnon last year. So it was a big-time struggle, but I think you hit the nail on the head right there that Stastny did a great job of slowing things down for McKinnon.
So I was almost wondering, like, if you put McKinnon back in the middle, maybe Deshane on the wing, something, but that seems a little bit too extreme. Final question for you, Drew. Patrick Waugh comes in the first year, of course. They exceed expectations. They go to Game 7 against the Minnesota Wild. If not for a Tyson Barry injury, they might have been in the second round. Last year, they take that step back that a lot of people expected. What do you think Patrick Waugh is going to do differently coaching-wise next year than maybe the year or two prior?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it all starts at the back end. They've got to find a way to be better defensively and be able to move the puck out of the zone much better. I don't know exactly strategically how Patrick Waugh is going to do that, but I think that's kind of where it starts. And I think they got to find a way to be more balanced offensively. They've got to find some depth on this team somehow, some way. I think, you know, when you look at some of the guys that were playing on this team last year that were getting, you know, starts and minutes on this team, guys like Marc-Andre Cleish and Cody McLeod, guys like that, you look at them and say, well, are they really NHL-type players, really NHL-caliber players? I look at Marc-Andre Cleish and I say, yeah, there's really no reason for him to be on this team. And I think kind of one of the underrated things that we talked about in Colorado a lot last year that maybe wasn't talked about throughout the NHL was that they didn't have Jesse Winchester last year, a guy that they brought in the offseason. He suffered a concussion. I think it was in the last preseason game or one of the last preseason games last year, and he never saw the ice in the regular season. And he would have been a guy that could have been that fourth line center, even played a little bit on the wing on the fourth line last year. And not having him, I think, was a huge detriment to this team. So if somehow, some way they can find more depth, if they can find some balance, especially down the middle for this team, I think they could be better. But at the beginning and the end of this team, it starts on that back end. So they've got to hope that they're not having to give regular minutes to guys like Nate Ginnan and Nick Holden and Brad Stewart, who was kind of a disaster last year in the blue line. If they can find a way, and if Walker can find a way to not give those guys regular type minutes, I think they're going to be a better team this year. But how much better, I think that just remains to be seen.
Drew Spivak covers the Colorado Avalanche for ESPNDenver.com and 105.5 ESPN Radio in Denver. Drew, thanks very much for doing this. Great insight. And yeah, the NHL season starts 2 months from today. It'll be another fun battle in the Central Division this year.
Absolutely, guys. It's been a pleasure coming on. I look forward to talking to you guys again soon.
Drew, give Springsteen another try.
I will. I will work on that starting today.
Thanks, Drew. Take care. Have a good weekend. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. It's the one and only Eagle Double G. Snoop Dogg. Da, 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 da. You know I'm hopping with the D-R-E. One final segment here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard is puzzled in the third and final challenge on the Bruce Springsteen Challenge here. This segment brought to you by Randall Plumbing and Heating.
It's also a live song, makes it harder. Hold on.
It's been an industry leader servicing the Manitoba market since 1905. For all your refrigeration, plumbing, and heating needs, commercial or residential, contact Randall Plumbing at 204-775-8406 or online at randallplumbing.com. Anything, Rich?
Is Richie stumped here?
I hear the chorus.
Corey seems very smug behind the glass here with his song choice. Time is literally ticking down.
I don't know. Is this off of track? Unreleased. Oh, he's got unreleased. I should have had that anyways. That one I'll give myself a break on.
Okay, it was a difficult song.
I think Ezzy was periscoping me.
I'm pretty sure he was. As we mentioned at the start of the show, Legal Curve intern Jesse Pollock in studio with us today. Jesse, you've been working with Bar Down, our friends at TSN, and the Bar Down sub website, I guess you can call it that, as an intern this year. How was that?
It's fantastic. Guys, they're great. My boss, Dave Kurich, is the man. Really enjoy working for him. And just a great environment at TSN. Yeah, I'm very lucky.
And now, he's the man being my man D.
My man D from Cabbie fame, of course,
and
right?
And I'm gone.
Yeah, and I'm gone. Exactly, yeah. Right. Now, where would you rather be an intern? Is it better to be a Legal Curve intern or a Bar Down intern?
Oh, my goodness.
Good question, Drew.
Thank you. That's a good question. I thought so.
Yeah. Barbara Walters, like, over there.
This is a crazy question.
We're going to send them the clip, so you better say us.
I love helping both of you guys.
That's a very good political answer there. He must have been watching the debates on
Jesse, are you
Thursday.
The fifth attendant on the next Canadian political debate?
No, yes. He's the 13th Republican candidate as well, I think.
You know what, though? Both internships have helped me out a lot, and I've learned a lot from both of them. So thank you to you guys and to the guys at Bar Down. Thank you very much, too.
There you go. Very good.
We appreciate you being here, man.
Very good political answer. That's it for the show on this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290.
Janie needs a shooter.
A big thanks to Jeff Nyberg from the Philadelphia Daily News for joining us to talk about the Flyers. A big thanks to Drew Spivak from ESPNDenver.com for joining us to talk about the Avs. In case you missed any of it, it will be available on iTunes and on TSN1290.ca.
Good to be back.
Yeah, good to be back. Thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Royal Sports, and Randall Plumbing. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook. And, of course, the website is illegalcurve.com. Until next Saturday at 9 a.m., thanks very much for listening to the show. And here it is. Your moment of zen.
All right, everyone, I hope you're hungry! It's challenge time! Our first contestant found a pizza crust in a few weeks back. He represents TSN 1290 and Illegal Curve. He is a man.